this is the beginning of a new chapter for him.
The Coast Guard drops the charges against a Sitka helicopter pilot. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, March 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Department of Labor looks for a new building.
You wouldn't believe the emails that we get from employees. And it's not two or three employees that are disgruntled.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net.
The U.S. Coast Guard dropped its charges against Lieutenant Lance Leone today. The Sitka-based Coast Guard aviator was facing charges of negligent homicide and destruction of government property in connection with the 2010 helicopter crash. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Leone's attorney said his client was ecstatic upon hearing the news that the charges have been dropped.
This is the beginning of a new chapter for him.
John Smith.
Probably one of the most difficult things he's going to have to do is to really be able to do that thing that he loves to do again. It's been quite a while since he has flown in or piloted an aircraft, and I'm hoping that he is going to be able to go to retraining soon. Pass that retraining and look forward to a new assignment in the Coast Guard, flying and rescuing people in accordance with the Coast Guard mission.
Leone was the co-pilot aboard Coast Guard Helicopter 6017 when it struck some wires between the mainland and an island near La Push, Washington on July 7th, 2010. The crash killed the chopper's pilot, Lieutenant Sean Kruger, along with aviation maintenance technicians Brett Banks and Adam Hoke. The crash was investigated by the Coast Guard, and Leone believed he had been cleared. He was on his way to train for a return to flight when the charges were announced in September. The charges came as a surprise to him and to many of his supporters in Sitka, where memorial signs still hang throughout the city's downtown. But retired Colonel John Farr, a former military attorney now in private practice in Anchorage, says he understands why Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, the commander of Coast Guard District 17 in Alaska, pursued the charges as far as he did.
For the sake of good order and discipline, I'm sure he needed to feel like he didn't leave any stone unturned.
Farr says the military operates on a culture of discipline and accountability. He said the decision not to head to trial didn't surprise him, but neither did the decision to investigate the charges in the first place.
The commander pursued the charges basically down a blind alley and reached the end of the road and said, well, okay, we really can't go any farther than that. There just isn't the proof there.
Ostebo's decision lines up with a recommendation made by Captain Andrew Norris, the officer who presided over a December hearing of the Coast Guard's evidence in the case. Norris did not say Leone was blameless in the flight, but he did say that the Coast Guard could not draw clear links between Leone's actions and the crash. In a statement, Ostebo said his decision was based on a review of the evidence from December's hearing and that Leone's actions do not merit a court-martial. Ostebo said that Coast Guard operations are inherently dangerous and that, quote, the deaths of three Coast Guardsmen and the circumstances warranted the fullest investigation into the charges against Leone. Still, Farr says there are administrative sanctions that could still apply, such as a letter of reprimand. That would make it very difficult for Leone to get back into the cockpit.
Of course, bear in mind that the Coast Guard of 2012 is something that could be different than the Army that I was in years ago. So things do change, policies change, but from what I know about the military, this put him in a hole, and it may not be something he can climb out of.
Lieutenant Veronica Colbath is a spokeswoman with the Coast Guard in Alaska. She says there's still some investigation ongoing and confirms that administrative sanctions are still possible. And she says the charges were dismissed without prejudice, which means if new information comes to light, they could be reinstated. She said more information on the investigation is likely due out in the next couple weeks. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
It's Super Tuesday. 437 candidates are up for grabs in 10 states, including 24 in Alaska. Tonight, people across the state are turning out at polling places to vote in a presidential preference poll. KSKA reporter Daisha Eaton joins us from Anchorage Christian Schools, a polling place in East Anchorage. Hi, Daisha.
Hi, Lori.
So what are you seeing at the polling place where you are right now? What's happening?
Lori, the voters are streaming in now as the polling place has just opened at 4 o'clock. And there's a long line out the doors, and the parking lot is full.
And what's the mood with the voters you've talked with so far? I know things are just getting underway there, but have you had a chance to talk to folks?
I've had a chance to talk with a few people, and most people are holding their cards pretty close. They're not telling me who they're voting for, but they all said they showed up tonight because they want to see change.
What do voters need to know if they haven't gotten out to polling places yet?
Well, you have to be a registered Republican voter to vote, and the polling places are open until 8 p.m., and the results should be coming in around 10 o'clock tonight.
The State Division of Elections says there are a little less than 500,000 voters in the state. A few more than 131,000 are registered as Republicans. 4 years ago, nearly 14,000 voted in the process. Are we expecting a similar turnout tonight?
Yes. Earlier this week, the chair of the Republican Party, Randy Riedrich, told me that there's been a big effort this year to make sure that there were enough polling places in convenient locations. And he's hoping the turnout this year will exceed the turnout in 2008.
All right, Daisha, thanks so much for that update.
You're welcome.
The poll will bind delegates to vote for whoever Alaskans choose tonight. Some conventions to choose delegates will begin directly after polling places close at 8 o'clock. If you need to find your polling place, you can go to AlaskaRepublicans.com. Mediated negotiations between the state and the owner of the Alaska Department of Labor building in Juneau have ended without a deal to extend the state's rental agreement. The state will soon start looking for office space for Labor Department employees. Vern Jones is Chief Procurement Officer with the Alaska Department of Administration, which negotiates leases on behalf of other state departments.
We weren't able to come to terms on the Juneau Labor building. Our plan now is to put out a competitive solicitation for replacement space for that lease.
Jones says the main sticking point was over the length of a new deal. The owners wanted a 10-year extension, while the state wanted no more than 5 years. He says Administration Commissioner Becky Haltberg wants more flexibility as the state explores its office space options in Juneau.
Commissioner all along has said that she wanted to preserve the option in future of a new state office building.
That's good news to members of Juneau's legislative delegation who have pushed for a new state-owned office complex in the capital city. The labor building has been plagued by numerous structural and air quality issues in recent years, and many employees say it's causing their lingering health problems. Juneau Democratic Senator Dennis Egan says something had to be done to improve conditions for those workers.
You wouldn't believe the emails that we get from employees, and it's not two or three employees that are disgruntled, and then other employees think, well, I don't feel very well either. I mean, there are a lot of employees that are directly affected, and I applaud the administration for getting them out of there.
If the state decides to build new office space, Egan says the delegation would like to see it located downtown near existing state offices and the Capitol.
It's more convenient. It's in the core area of government, and that's where government ought to be. Directors and financial people, people that directly relate to the legislature.
In the meantime, Jones expects the request for proposals for office space to go out in the next 2 months.
We've done some preliminary work, and we know that there is space available, maybe not all in the downtown area, but area-wide, we think that there's sufficient space available. So we're hoping for good competition.
The state's lease at the labor building expires at the end of June. Jones says it's unlikely all of the employees will be moved out by then, but the current lease allows the state to stay in the facility on a month-to-month basis. Department of Labor officials involved in the lease negotiations did not respond to requests for comment. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, conservation groups react to the state's new bear management plan.
This administration has taken wildlife management to a new low.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
Allie Zirkel and John Baker are leading the Iditarod. The mushers left the Nikolai checkpoint at 1:50 this afternoon. Jeff King, Lance Mackey, Mitch Seavey, and Huneff followed out of Nikolai about an hour later. GPS currently has Zirkel running about 5 miles ahead of Baker on her way to the McGrath checkpoint. She is expected to arrive there sometime this evening. In recent years, top mushers have opted to stop only briefly in McGrath and push on to the Takotna checkpoint about 20 miles down the trail. That's where many mushers take their 24-hour layover, enjoying a scenic setting and free hamburgers and pie. Alaska's Board of Game voted unanimously over the weekend to establish a 2-year bear control program in the Middle Kuskokwim River area. The program allows department staff to shoot bears from helicopters. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, aerial predator control of bears is new in Alaska.
Decades ago, hunters along the Middle Kuskokwim River had ample opportunity to bag a moose. But lately, Fish and Game spokesperson Kathy Harms says that hasn't been the case.
That area's had quite a low moose density for quite some time. And our best estimates indicate it would take decades for the moose population to be able to provide the kind of harvest needed for those people.
Biologists say predation is the leading factor that limits moose population growth in the area. In 2004, a wolf control program was approved in the management subunit southwest of McGrath. But the number of moose calves is still down due to predation by brown and black bears.
So the board chose to adopt a program which would allow bears to be removed from a relatively small area, about 540 square miles.
Staff from the Department of Fish and Game will shoot bears from helicopters in the area.
Our goal is not to return to all-time highs. Our goal is to restore a level of harvest to people who really depend on the moose as their meat resource.
The plan is modeled after another successful program in a neighboring subunit that relocated predators by air. The moose season there was reopened after a 5-year closure. But the public voiced concerns about the effects of translocated bears in other parts of the state. Harm says the board had a long discussion about management options before making their final decision.
They decided that the swiftest, most humane, most economical way to do this was to have department staff kill the bears. And all of the other considerations were either less efficient, less effective, or cost a great deal more money.
The program is limited to the spring season in 2013 and 2014. Department staff will salvage the bear meat and distribute it to local communities. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Wildlife conservation groups are concerned by the state's plan to shoot bears from aircraft. Valerie Connor is the conservation director at the Alaska Center for the Environment. She says no other state allows aerial predator control of bears, and she says the plan makes it too easy for the department to overharvest the animals.
They're going to shoot every bear they see. That's the program. It's basically a bear extermination program in 540 square miles of land. So any bear that's coming through there will die.
Another proposal that passed at the January Board of Game meeting allows department employees to shoot brown bears from aircraft in Game Unit 26B on the North Slope. The proposal is aimed at boosting musk ox population numbers and is scheduled to take effect this spring. Connor says both aerial predator control programs passed with very little input from the public. But the Alaska Center for the Environment is more concerned about a proposal that would allow bear snaring. That usually involves trapping a bear's paw in a bait bucket hanging from a tree. She says that plan is especially disturbing because it allows the public to participate in killing the bears, and there is no bag limit. Connor says the proposals are pushing the state in a disturbing direction when it comes to wildlife management.
This administration has taken wildlife management to a new low. Never before have we allowed snaring of bears. Never before have we allowed killing bears from airplanes. And now suddenly, you know, here we are. We're going to allow both of those methods in big tracts of the state.
The bear snaring proposal will be considered later at the Board of Game meeting. The meeting is scheduled to continue through Monday in Fairbanks. Alaska's only accredited community college is looking for a new president. The University of Alaska Anchorage dismissed Doug DeSori yesterday after 7 years on the job. KCHU's Tony Gorman has more.
Through a written statement, University of Alaska Chancellor Tom Case acknowledged DeSori's efforts and success during his tenure as president of Prince William Sound Community College, but he cited a number of leadership challenges over the last few years as a reason for the dismissal. Case wasn't available to specify those comments when KCHU called his office. A university spokesperson wouldn't comment on the matter due to his policy on personnel issues.
It's, you know, a surprise to everybody. I have mixed feelings personally, of course. Professionally, I'm happy to help the college however I can.
Prince William Sound Community College Dean of Instruction, Wes Lumberg, was named interim president. Upon hearing about DeSorcy's dismissal, Lumberg met with the staff to discuss the college's immediate future.
Asked everybody to not focus on the past or what's happened. We really don't need to know, but rather to work together, you know, for the students and fulfilling our mission and carrying the college forward as it's been doing for, what, 30 years or so.
Lumberg, who came to the college 5 years ago after spending 11 years at Minnesota State Community and Technical College, says he's still trying to figure out his new duties. Until he does, he says he will try to steady the ship.
There's been some minor decisions that have been made, and of course I'll continue to do that and take on the bigger ones as well. But as far as the direction of the college, there's no change at this point.
During the interim, Lumberg will oversee a number of projects, including renovations to the Wellness Center and the newly created Outdoor Leadership Program. As for taking the president's job full-time?
You know, I really haven't thought about it. I'm getting that question quite a bit. I haven't really thought about that now. I'm certainly not eliminating the idea, but I'm just focused on, you know, just helping the college get to the next step.
The University of Alaska is conducting a nationwide search to find a permanent replacement. There is no timetable as to when the position will be filled. I'm Tony Gorman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. Enjoy high school hoops in Anchorage during the 2012 ASAA March Madness State Basketball Championships, March 12th through 17th. Come early and stay late to enjoy Anchorage's big wildlife with events, shopping, dining, and activities for the whole family. For more information on what to see and do in Anchorage, explore anchorage.net/Alaskans, your source for Anchorage information. This message sponsored by Visit Anchorage.
Another preliminary hearing has recommended court-martial trials for Fort Wainwright soldiers charged in connection with the death of a fellow Stryker Brigade soldier. An Article 32 hearing wrapped up yesterday for Staff Sergeant Andrew Van Bokel, Sergeants Jeffrey Hurst and Adam Holcomb, and Specialist Thomas Curtis. They face charges including negligent homicide, dereliction of duty, and reckless endangerment related to the October 2011 death of Private Danny Chen in Afghanistan. Private Chen was found dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound, but his family has said the Army told them he was severely hazed by fellow soldiers. Four other Stryker soldiers are also facing charges related to Chen's death. The brigade's regional commander has final say on whether charges are forwarded to court-martial. So far, charges against one of the soldiers implicated in Chen's death, Sergeant Travis Carden, have been forwarded to general court-martial. The Fort Wainwright Stryker Brigade has facilitated the reopening of a school in Afghanistan. Stryker Lieutenant Miles Dunning is in charge of overseeing humanitarian assistance projects for the infantry company that led the village school project near Spirwangar in southern Afghanistan. Lieutenant Dunning says the school, originally built by Canadian forces, closed due to intimidation by the Taliban. He says the Stryker soldiers have seen security improve and worked with local officials to reopen the school.
Kind of got the wheels rolling on getting supplies to the school, getting desks. I went to the Afghan Department of Education, and they've done a pretty good job of recruiting teachers. And there were several hundred kids that showed up to attend the school.
Lieutenant Dunning says the school is helping Afghan kids get general education.
Reading, writing, and Pashto, basic mathematics, basic science, basic language, stuff like that. I think the biggest thing people are trying to get out of the school is literacy. So there's some teachers there, and for the past week and a half, there's been pretty steady attendance.
Lieutenant Dunning says they're optimistic the Afghan National Army can provide security to keep the school open.
Trying to transition towards where it's 100% Afghan planned and operated. So the U.S. presence isn't necessary in this area anymore because the ANA can handle it.
Meanwhile, the Stryker unit has started another school project to the south of Spirwangar. The goal is to complete construction and open the school before the Stryker's year-long deployment to Afghanistan ends next month. Lieutenant Dunning says the school projects are typical of the community service type work that comprises most of what the Stryker Brigade has done in Afghanistan. The state of Alaska agreed to release more than $50,000 to Central Council Tlingit and Haida Tribes Child Support Unit. The court agreement allows the council to disperse the money to some families who have been waiting for years to see it. Tara Bicknell from member station KHNS has more.
The $50,444.81 is from individual permanent fund dividends garnished over the years by the state at the request of the Central Council to satisfy child support debts within the tribe. But the money has been held by the state since, moving the council to file a lawsuit 2 years ago against the State of Alaska Child Support Services Division. Holly Handler represented the tribe in the case and says the agreement to release those funds means the waiting will come to an end for children and families who are owed child support payments.
A lot of these families are getting two permanent fund dividends, some in their entirety, some just partial dividends, but that's going to be a huge boost to a lot of these families that have been scraping by to provide basic necessities like food and other groceries and diapers and heat.
The amounts include money owed to the child's custodian in each case and money owed to the Central Council for recoupment of tribal public assistance. The release will send $15,000 to $20,000 to member families primarily in Southeast Alaska who have child support orders issued by the tribal court but have not received all owed child support from the non-custodial parent.
This is a really exciting development for the tribe because it's a pretty big step forward in terms of the tribe and the state cooperating to reach an agreement to help tribal children and their families.
The rest is going to the tribe for reimbursement for providing families with temporary assistance to needy families. Child support for families in that program goes through the council. Representatives with the state did not return phone calls, but agreed through council to release the funds from the court registry pending outcome of the final court order in the case. The final judgment is expected in the coming months. Handler says the interim step is an encouraging one.
Well, this agreement is a really good sign, we think, of future cooperation to come, that with these jurisdictional issues resolved, we can move forward to address individual problems and more large-scale problems like these group of permanent fund dividends, and that cooperation should benefit tribal kids, tribal families, mostly in Southeast, but some all over the state.
The council's tribal child support unit began operating in 2007 and hears cases involving paternity and child support. An argument between the unit and the state on jurisdictional issues was settled last October as a Juneau Superior Court judge recognized the tribe had jurisdiction over child support when the case involves a child that's enrolled or is eligible for enrollment with the tribe. In Haines, I'm Tara Bicknell.
Tlingit master artist and elder Mabel Pike has passed away. Pike was born in Douglas and spent her early years in Juneau. She and her husband Joe lived in Tanana and Bethel in the 1960s before moving to Anchorage, where she soon became active in Native community activities. Her son, Jan C., says she's perhaps best known for her beadwork and as a teacher.
She used to first teach it in the schools. She used to go into the grade schools in the Anchorage area and teach the kids beading and talk to them about the culture. And then she started giving classes to adults. She did that for a while. She was Stanford University would fly her down to Stanford every year after the Fur Rendez, and she would teach students down there moccasin making and beading.
Pike also taught and lectured at the University of Alaska Anchorage, the Anchorage Museum, and in communities such as Chenega, Kodiak, Edna Bay, and Togiak. She was a founding member of the nonprofit Tahitna Arts and Cultural Group based in downtown Anchorage. C says she also founded an arts and craft show that has become a fur rendezvous institution.
We would go out there the night before the rendezvous, and they would show Mom where the tables and chairs were, and I'd set them up. And we did that for years before the Rondi said they would take it over, and Mom no longer had to do it. She that was one of her proud accomplishments, was getting that, founding that craft show at the Diamond Center.
In 1987, the Alaska Federation of Natives adopted a resolution calling for a community gathering center in Anchorage, which led to a multi-year effort to raise the money needed to build the Alaska Native Heritage Center. C says his mother was involved in the early planning, teaching, and demonstrating beading after it opened, and as a longtime board member.
She was involved in that since its inception, when they first started having meetings about that. And she was there for the groundbreaking and all the other main events that had to do with the completion of the Heritage Center. And then she just, you know, took great pride in working out there and when she did.
Pike was active in other organizations as well, including the Anchorage Tribes of Tlingit and Haida Indians of Alaska. Mabel Pike died Monday afternoon of complications related to a fall. She was 92. Her family plans to announce services soon. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Ronco in Sitka, Daisha Eaton and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Casey Kelly and Tony Gorman in Juneau, Emily Schwing and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Tara Bicknell in Haines. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Ace Air. Ace Air Cargo now offering passenger service to Dutch Harbor 6 days a week. Information and reservations at AceAirCargo.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers competitive interest rates with programs tailored for first-time home buyers and home choice seminars that cover the details of purchasing and financing a home. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.